expect to learn more today and tomorrow. So, okay. So the motivation of this is that we're thinking about doing the inflationary landscape. Okay. So by now, string theory suggested that there's a stringy landscape, or I call Cosby landscape, just to be a little bit more general. And typically, there's many fields involved. Of course, the number moduli is very large, and we are interested only in the fields where the typical mass of those fields are below the Hubble scale. And if any time the universe, you can think more concretely in terms of, say, a D3 brain moving in the landscape, then it's reasonable to assume that while it's moving in the landscape, high up in the landscape, inflation takes place. So if the universe is trapped in a local minimum, then of course we will get eternal inflation. Okay? But eternal inflation will give us a scaling power spectrum, which is not the case. So certainly from WMAP data, we know that the power spectrum index is not 1, and that implied that at least for the CMB data involved, that it's not eternally fading, it's probably rolling in some sense. And so we know that at least for the CMB part of the spectrum, the inflaton is not trapped in any of the site if it's moving in the cosmic landscape, but it's mobile. Okay? And I should point out that the mobility of the inflaton or any degree of freedom in, say, some sort of potential, typically the dimension of that landscape or potential must be more than 2. So multi-field, that's why we have the multi-field. The reason is because if we move in one dimension, typically what happens is that the wave function can easily get trapped or at least localized in some region, quantum mechanically. That means that if you have one-dimensional system, you shine a beam of light or send an electron through it, and if the potential is not periodic, okay, a little bit of impurity, say, okay, then it cannot pass through. Okay, that's what I mean by not mobile, not it's trapped somewhere. And in D equals 2, same thing. No matter how weak the imperfections are, okay, the impurities, doping or other things, it would be trapped. Only when you go to D equals 3 or higher, then it can be not trapped. Okay, and in fact, the higher D you go to, the less likely it would be trapped. Okay? And intuitive, it's quite clear. You have a multi-dimension, you have more directions to move, more directions to get out of where you are. And so in high dimensions, we call the system perfectly, okay, if you want, classically. Or quantum mechanically, we call it conducting. Okay, that means, say, if it's electron, you can move around. So what we want to ask is that if inflation is taking place in a landscape, and the landscape potential is not 100% periodic, okay, or flat, okay, or very smooth, then what signatures we expect to see, okay, in this system. So a likely scenario we have is that we will treat the landscape as a multidimensional effective potential, okay, and the potential is somewhat random. And the key issue, of course, if it's random, it probably does not much you can do, naive even things. But on the other hand, this is exactly the problem in condensed matter they have studied for the last 50 years. In fact, periodic potentials like a crystal lattice are well understood by 1940s, 1950s. And turning on little bit impurities can be treated weakly as a perturbation theory. And that's also pretty much understood by the 50s. So after 50s, most of the work is in random. Random can due to a strongly interacting system, can due to alloy, mixing tool, or glass. So you can think of many random systems. An insulator, for example, is clearly one of them. Anyway, so here we're going to treat is that we treat a multi-field inflaton. Here I mean that the inflaton in a multi-dimensional field space that you will essentially bump around many times. Okay, and you can also tunnel quickly in some directions. So I'm going to treat it as a random walk with some drift velocity. Okay? This is the basic idea. And the density perturbation comes from the quantum fluctuation. That's key. Okay, so even if, I should point out very early now, is that even if the classical path is a random walk, okay, if you don't turn on quantum fluctuations, then every patch we follow the same random walk path. Okay? So there's no density perturbation. So density perturbation comes only from quantum fluctuations. However, the fact that it's a path which is not along a particular direction, it can turn, you know, bounce around, will have in fact impact on the quantum fluctuation. So that's where we are looking for. So sometimes we can make a statistical treatment, sometimes we cannot. Okay. So roughly picture goes like this.
Yeah, but
you start, suppose there's no quantum fluctuation. You start initially moving in some direction, right? So, you know, universe expand, every causal patch have the same classical path. And then you're gonna bounce around, you know, and then fall off a cliff, but every path will do it exactly the same. Every patch with exactly the same particle because it's classically deterministic. Even random in a sense that, you know, I have a potential. You can think about potential, smooth potential, and I turn on bumps and dips, for example, ridges, right? But classically, initial condition is the same. Oh, because of one patch, let's say, okay, one causal patch, the same initial condition, and then that patch, you know, expand, inflate.
Through this randomness, as
opposed to? Well, then the question is, you say initially I'm not starting from one same identical condition. Okay, so I'm assuming, I mean, that you start from identical condition from one tiny patch.
So suppose you have one patch and you just have one gentle fluctuation along it. Wouldn't that, over long periods of time in a random potential, give you a lot of information?
No. The reason is the following. The reason is that you have one path, and then you do a random walk. So suppose the random walk is what I show, okay? Suppose this is the random walk, okay? Or more people, some random walk like this. If the patch, you know, inflate, every patch will follow exactly the same random walk. So by the time they go down, say, the heat time, they will arrive at the bottom of the potential same time. So there's no density perturbation. So density perturbation is a quantum effect, but obviously path like this will have a impact on it, so maybe I made it so illustrate a little bit how that happens. Okay.
But the initial conditions are just...
No, you can say that, okay, I can have two patches, and two patches have different initial conditions. So,
but the gentle fluctuation inside the patch, they just get...
This is a classical path, so classically there's no fluctuation, even though it's bouncing around.
Sure.
Okay. Okay, so the path will go zigzag like this, for example, or something, you know, generate from the walk. The question is, the speed at any time is relatively fast, okay? But the drift velocity can still be very slow. Okay, so you can bounce around very fast, but effectively you look at it, it would seem to be going rather slow. So question is,
how do you define very fast?
I would quantify that later. So certainly bounce around, the speed it's moving is clearly much smaller than the what you call drift speed. Okay, so the distance it travel over some period of time. The drift essentially is that this distance travel over the whole time, that's obviously much smaller than the particle. So in some sense, you can think about it's like an index refraction. The light speed in a material bouncing around is slower than the speed that it traveled macroscopically. Okay? So you can think about drift velocity and drift speed as the macroscopic speed versus the intrinsic speed. Question, does it help the fine-tuning of flatness potential? That's one question I want to address. So let me explain a little bit more here. Usually people do is that you have a path, move along, and then you make a turn. Okay? And there is, so the actual path is say some background path, which I'll call sigma. And then if you make a turn, then instead of going some path like this, it will turn, and the turning can say in the direction S. Then that will move in a direction which is sort of not the background trajectory. So people usually decompose this into adiabatic and ectopic model. So that's sort of a pretty standard treatment of this. And usually people treat one term. Okay? So if you do one term, it's not too surprising that if you do one term, and if quantum fluctuate a little bit away from the path, then these two paths are different lengths. And so that difference in length essentially is the contribution to the entropy. Okay, so the fluctuation along the path, that's AD value. So that's roughly the decomposition you bear in mind. So in multi-field inflation, crudely speaking, you have many fields. So I require a number of fields with the mass, actually with the bumps smaller than H, typically, the mass scale, to be larger than 2, or you can think about a dozen or 100, that's okay too. And you obey some equation like this, classical path, obey this equation. And what I'm going to do is that I'm going to identify the direction E to be the unit vector along the classical path. Of course, that direction changes, the path changes. And I can sort of reduce the, at least the classical path follow some direction, follow that equation. Okay? And then one can get the curvature perturbation, which is zeta, and I can use delta n formalism, which you know, people have developed, and I can write that in terms of this, where n is the EFO, so delta n is the change in EFO from different, because of quantum fluctuation later. And then one can expand this, where qi is the perturbation of phi I in a spatially flat gate. So essentially scalar field fluctuation, perturbation. Okay. This is quantum. And then this part, this is the n, derivative of I, and then I can expand this way. Okay. If you want to calculate non-Gaussianity, you have to keep this, but for this part, I'm going to skip that, okay, because it turns out the non-Gaussianity due to this randomness is negligibly small. Okay, so I'm not going to talk about that. So I'm going to focus on the first term. Okay. Okay, so delta n has two pieces. This is along the path. So if you have single field, you only have this piece, okay? So that's not surprising, single field. You have, which is a single field, so a single scalar field perturbation essentially give you the first term. And the second term is due to the Turner path. For example, here you can see E is along the tangential direction, and E dot is obviously perpendicular to E sigma, okay? So that's that means if you have only one direction and no turn, then this term will be zero. And qi is the fluctuation of the field perpendicular to the tangential one, sigma. And if you write in terms of curvature perturbation, this will give you the equation this, which is well known. And that is, if you have no entropic mode, okay, this term is absent, then zeta dot, the curvature perturbation, we get frozen outside the horizon. That's well known, okay? But once you have the entropic mode, then it will continue to evolve given by this equation. And that's why the entropic, that's how entropic contributes to the density perturbation. Okay. So power spectrum will be given by this formula, well known. And usually from tangential, you only have one piece, which is the tangential piece. So usual case, you only have this term. And here you have all the other terms, okay, which the S is the direction perpendicular. And you sum over all those perpendiculars. So if you have D field, then that's D minus one term in principle. Okay. And the interesting about random is that there's no correlation between NS and NQ. And of course, QS and Q sigma, of course, there's no correlation. Those 2 points vanishes. So essentially, when the sum over, I only really have term. This is the normal one, usual adiabatic term. And this is the entropic term. So they sort of nicely factorize this because of the randomness, okay? So QS, Q sigma, QS, QS prime all drops out. Okay, so this is a simplification. And so the whole power spectrum P, zeta, is given by the adiabatic term plus the entropic. So this is the adiabatic term, this is entropic. So this simple factorization is quite neat. So the picture is the following. Usually if I make a turn, then I have, say, two paths go along and make a turn, quantum fluctuation go from one to the other one, and then the two paths different lengths. And that contributes to the evolution of zeta, okay, zeta dot there. However, we're going to turn many times. Okay, so if you turn once and turn twice, that effect actually cancels out. Okay, so you've turned many times, that effect essentially cancels out, except that if you do randomly, there will be some accumulation of the drift. Okay, so that entropic is essentially accumulation of the drift. Okay, so that's the simple picture we have. Okay. Okay, so prediction. Well, we can parameterize various things. So we can think about, first of all, chi, sigma dot average over, compared with the intrinsic microscopic speed, we introduce chi. It turns out chi cannot, it's bigger than one, but cannot be that much bigger than one, turns out. And remember, zeta dot is equals to the entropic mode, but integrated. So it's not surprising we'll be corresponding to some e-fold and star, which for our purpose, you can think about the number e-fold, like 60, okay? Although the actual number is a little bit different, but this is good enough for this purpose. And this theta contains the strength of the scattering, okay? If the scattering is very weak, little dimples, little perturbations, then it will be very weakly scattered, and this theta will be very small. On the other hand, theta can be big, okay? So this theta, which later I call G because I rescale it with D, measures the strength of the scattering, okay? Average scale. And then you can look at power index ns minus 1, of course, and this is the usual two terms. And then you get another term, which can be as big as maybe 2% maximum. Okay, it really, mostly because if theta is very big, then this is essentially 1 over ne, so roughly 2%. So at most, you can get to 2% more than the background potential. Okay. On the other hand, if theta is small, it's really not much impact, okay? And you can look at the tensor to scalar perturbation ratio, okay, but, Yeah, it's always a red cube because theta is really, you can think about theta as like the scattering angle square, okay, so it's always positive. It's between 0 and 1 somewhere. Yeah, so Q-mass is same as H over 2 pi squared, right? Because whenever it's scalar field, it's reflect, it's the quantum fluctuation. So Q is the, okay.
So this is just changing
variables?
Yeah,
Q, so QS essentially is H over 2 pi. But NS is tells you, you know, how much you change, right? How much you move in each direction. And that measures the strength of the scattering. The larger the scattering, the stronger, so it bounces around, then NSNS is big. If you weakly scatter, NSNS is small. So if you no scattering, you know, just smooth path, like usual case, NSNS is one, zero. Okay. So that measure the strength.
You redefine NSNS as
theta? No, you calculate. You calculate in terms of, how much you scatter, the strength of the scattering, and how frequently you scatter. So it's a combination of those. So for example, you can weakly scatter, but scatter a lot, versus strongly scatter, but happen once every now and then. But it's the product of those that tells you essentially the strength of overall scattering. So theta contains those information. Later we'll come back a little bit on this. How you calculate? Yeah. You can identify that, which I do later. Identify that as the, if you take entropic, that data essentially is the scatter angle square over d. D is the dimension times phi dot square and times frequency, which we call delta ne. That means that delta ne I introduce later. Here I'm not so important because it's a It's decomposing to three parameters. So instead of having three parameters, you can bump into one. That's the reason. That's simpler. Right. But it's also proportional to how frequently you scatter.
Does it have to be evaluated at different
times? It can change over time, sure.
Yeah. And so, and it does have, so like, it has some epsilon dependence. But you need to evaluate epsilon later on, so
it can depend on EFO, right? So different time, right? It depends on the detail of your physics. So you can fluctuate a lot, and then later on it can be very smooth or vice. So it's really depend on those properties and really involve an integral in a sense. And that's why I capture all those information into a one parameter theta. Okay.
And it must be true that you're assuming that the time between scattering events is very short compared to the time. The time between scattering events is short compared to the time over which you inflate.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, it can be.
For the statistical treatment to work, sounds like it.
That's right. That's right. The scattering time is small compared with the time you traverse, but that's not necessarily later on. We'll see. We'll look at those two limits. Okay. You can say the scattering is very rare, or the scatter is a lot. So thanks.
And is there? Do you have a sense from the string side? What sets the scale for this?
You tell me the potential in the landscape, and I can tell you. The landscape, right? And you tell me where you're evolving, then I can tell you more clearly. So that's the unknown. Okay. Yes.
I'm around the chi, just raising the difference between the drift velocity.
Yeah, the chi is more or less like the drift velocity is a sigma dot expectation value. Okay. While sigma dot is like how big can it be? So essentially what I'm saying is that if you look coarse grain, now how coarse grain, we will discuss this, because at least in coarse grain, then you can say the power spectrum change only by a term of this form, okay? Which is really not much change, since 1 or 2% change is you can change the potential absorbed into 2 epsilon plus zeta, for example.
Fast scatterings. Are you going to tell us what the average of the energy density was, say, to see if it was potential dominated on average, or?
Oh yeah, sure. Potential. Okay, it's always potential dominated, because I think about really high landscape, right? So the fluctuation can be up and down, and we'll discuss how much it is. Okay, yeah, we'll discuss that. But suppose you can think about dropping a lot. Okay,
Is there a box somewhere there?
Yeah, there's a box, but it's empty. Anyway.
Another box?
That's good. It's okay. It's okay. So you can think about potential, which is very. Okay. You can think about potential, which is dip a lot but narrow. Okay. Then you can go down and up, and. You go down, and then you can go to kinetic energy, and there's no time to inflate it away, then you can come back up. So that would give you a dip. So a dip can be narrow but deep, and that's permitted. Right.
I guess H dot bar epsilon is defined to be some average over the total rho.
Yeah.
But if you have this dip, and so I can imagine, I will presume that from the highest rho parameters, like eta prime, is going to be big. Temporarily.
Eta prime.
But earlier on you mentioned that you.
Yeah. So we'll look at more detail. Okay. So this is sort of the statistical growth feature. And then we can look at more detail.
Okay.
Will you also tell us more about the background evolution later?
Sure. Background evolution. Yes. I come back to this. The natural question is, okay, that the fact is, does it help that the potential don't have to be as flat? All right. In fact, that's where I'm going to come to. So, okay. So the simple prediction power spectrum may have an extra red tail of up to 2%, but it can be very small. So that's not really such a big prediction. The non-Gaussianity due to randomness is typically very small. Again. Thank you. Okay. So after a lot of work calculating it, then you understand why it's small. So, right. Yeah. So we come back to that. Right. We come back to that. Okay. And then the tensor to scalar mode can be big by as much as chi, and in principle chi can be very big, but it turns out chi cannot be much bigger than one. It's always bigger than one, but cannot be a big factor over one. So again, no change. So essentially, the first three predictions are really no predictions. Okay, it's pretty much like what a single scalar field will give you, more or less. And then the last thing is that the randomness will show up in a power spectrum, okay, as random oscillation. So I'm going to emphasize on that because that is something that can be observed, okay? And here I'm not looking at the bispectrum or look at tensor. I'm looking only at the two-point correlation, only at the power spectrum. So that's something which I will emphasize on. So I'm going to do is I'm going to treat the randomness as random fluctuation and put in the equation, okay? So for example, this randomness is due to the entropic, which is a classical effect, okay? And so here I make a comment because Sarah talked about also similar things, is that you can also put the quantum effect in, and the eta is a quantum, okay? So eta-eta correlation will be due to adiabatic, which is goes like H fit, okay? So this essentially gives you what we know, the adiabatic or the single field power spectrum. And this is the due to the classical. So I can introduce both if we want to. And then because the C and eta, this is like white noise, but C and eta correlation is zero, so there's no, you know, so the power spectrum is factored again into this is eta eta, this is CC. Okay, so essentially integrated. Okay, so roughly speaking. Yeah, this is this phi essentially is a multidimensional phi. I only look sigma. Okay, so the sigma I write the sigma. So sigma is like bouncing around. So you can think about sigma path which moving in multidimensional, but I just always look at the sigma only. Okay, and then the bouncing around will be coming from this white noise term, the random fluctuation. Okay. Sure, so as I showed earlier, it factorizes. So this allows me to do this because this will reproduce a factorized form between adiabatic and entropic. Okay, so you can say the earlier work justifies how why I can treat it that way. Okay. Yeah, but as I said, because it's random, so that randomness tend to cancel, except due to the triple drift effect of that, right? And that can be capsuled from epsilon, okay? And I can relate that data. So what Sarah talked yesterday is the quantum fluctuation, and I'm talking about this today. I can include this, but I treat it separately, okay? And also, if you do slow roll, you can ignore this, but because the random fluctuation, even you move slowly, but you can get a sharp contribution, and the phi dot dot have to be kept. Okay, so entropic. Yeah. So what I'm saying, this is approximation based on the fact that earlier I can show that they factorize. Okay. Because this factorizes, okay. Now, this also is quantum, right? Everything is quantum here. But this quantum is due to the fact that you have extra direction scatter, okay? So now I can treat this as classical random walk, but contributes to the quantum. So in the sense that this is quantum plus classical due to the random walk, and this one is just the background potential. Okay, so it's the approximation we are making. And that approximation is justified here because of this analysis. Okay, so one can make life a little bit easier to see the overall feature. Anyway, so this is if it's slow roll, then this is what Sarah talked about. So now I'm going to address the question: does a random walk in a multi-field space help to lessen the fine-tuning we need on the flatness of the inflaton potential? Okay, so this is the question we want to address. And so I will treat the random walk, okay? And then the equation, of course, is given by this, and the random walk is by some diffusion constant. This is pretty standard with the potential. And I'm going to look at small p's potential. So potential is, and I only keep the leading term, okay? Because if I'm going to look piecewise, then the potential is just linear. I can forget about the quadratic piece. So I'm piecewise, I can study that. And I can find that by T, I can solve this by T in terms of this white noise.
In a sufficiently high-dimensional space, you might imagine that if you're at some vacuum energy, then it's very easy to find a path that gets you all the way down to zero rather quickly. So how do you put in the assumption that you more or less stay up high and don't drop down fast?
Yeah. So as I said earlier, if you have potential right up at some direction, just go down, then you will hit that path. Okay. Right. You will go down. Now, if the potential has some dip like this, it will just come back up because the time for expanding the kinetic energy away is neglected. It happens very fast. So what the physics is that you have to go through a path, and the path naturally go, and then you have to go relative large distance for you to get enough info. Now there can be another path which go down very fast, but you may not take that path. So I'm going to analyze this. Right, so I'm going to argue this, and then we can see how much assumption about a potential we still have to open. Okay, so that's the bottom line. So, the key is now I can get the expectation value of phi dot, and you can easily see that varies because it's e to the minus 3ht, very rapidly this drop out, and it just goes to b over 3h, which is the slow roll velocity, slow roll speed, okay? So that means that phi dot, the average, is the slow roll speed, okay? Now, the next thing we want to know is the variance of the phi dot, how much can we deviate from this, how much the drift velocity can deviate from the slow roll speed, and it's given by this, and the variance is essentially also proportional to d, so that tells how much diffusion, because very quickly that drop out. You can also calculate phi, and then the variance of phi, so you can calculate.
What is b?
B is essentially the b prime. Okay, I look at small region, and then that's linearize it, and that's a slope. Essentially b prime. Okay, I think b prime constant. For small range, okay, some approximation. You can think about the linear potential if you want.
Are you assuming that you're in a slow roll regime? So
well, we'll see. Yeah. Unfortunately, yes. I'm sorry. Okay. So we can do this, and you can calculate the deviation, and you can calculate the probability distribution of phi dot as function of time, and then typical, after EFO, then essentially approach this solution. And that means that the drift velocity deviates from the slow roll velocity by some amount. You can always do that. And the spread is given by this. That means typical path, you can have a drift velocity which is not the slow roll velocity, slow roll speed. It can be bigger or smaller. Depends on d. If d is very big, you can be way away. Okay. So that means that suppose d is very big, then the phi dot can be different from b over 3hy by a factor of 3 or 4. So you can even phi dot can be very slow. Even the slow roll velocity is, say, big. Okay. So it depends on your initial condition and depends on what happened. Okay. However, unfortunately, it turned out that later on we'll see that d cannot be that big. Okay. D is bounded by the data. And when d is bounded by the data, we see that phi dot must be pretty close to b over 3h. And that means that there's really little gain in from the usual fine tuning of slow roll. So you still need a slow roll potential which is such that the speed is slow. And if you make the speed faster, then you have to choose your phi dot initial such that it's different, slower. That's a different kind of fine tuning. And typically, when d is small, you really don't gain much. Okay. So essentially, there's little or no improvement on the fine tuning problem. So essentially, what it means that now the picture we have is that I don't know where the flatness of the background potential is. So you can think about, I still have a pretty flat background potential, which is the direction that the tangential path goes, sigma goes. And on that, you can have a lot of bumps, okay? Bumps and dips. Okay? And you can turn that on and turn it off, make them big or small, okay? So this is because in order to fit the data, we have no choice, but essentially the coarse grain potential is like the slower potential, but the fine grain, we have features on it.
It doesn't have to be shallow, but you're saying on average, it's gotta be shallow.
That's right, but we will see how much bump you can be. So now, yes?
I have a small question about the drift velocity. Right. Do you mean by that the velocity along the adiabatic direction, or do you mean velocity that you...
Along the adiabatic direction.
Okay, so that's, but it's not the velocity that would describe how far you go on the landscape according to your
relative. It's essentially how you go in the landscape, right? But in some particular direction, so the landscape is typically random, and then you find a path which you can move down. You know, there could be another path, but there's a barrier to it. So you find a path you can move down, and you always choose the path that's easiest to, with the best gradient, but without bumps preventing it.
True, but the drift velocity, which describes how far you go on average on the landscape, this will be the square root of the velocity along the...
Well, the drift velocity will be 5R, and what we showed when D is small, which turned out to be case, the drift velocity must be pretty close, directly approaches the slower potential, speed.
Slower speed. So you're doing a random walk.
Yeah. So even if you do random walk, but the drift velocity essentially approaches the slower velocity, speed.
But don't you have a square root in there? Usually
you can have variance, sure, but the variance is small. Okay, because of the D is a measurement of the variance. Okay, the D is the diffusion constant. It measures the variance, how much you can. So that when D is small, the variance is small. So this is the measure, okay? This is the variance. So when D is small, the variance is small. So, you know, you don't have to really follow the slow speed, but it's pretty close to it. You know, you can solve it, okay? So that means the bottom line is that we still have to fine tune the potential to coarse grain slow potential.
I guess the question is, it's kind of counterintuitive because you're saying you don't go as far as you expected to because you're going the square root of distance, but you took as much time as you thought. So why was the velocity not square root?
That's I'm talking about drift velocity, right?
Yeah.
And then how much variance you can have. So drift velocity would be like this, and then you can bounce around. And then the question: if D is big, you can bounce around a lot, even along this direction, right? But if the D is small, then you bounce around not that much.
Let's focus on the mean, not on the fluctuation.
Right, the mean is 5R, right? This is the 5R. Mean essentially is the solar velocity speed.
So it sounds a little bit counterintuitive, because on the one hand, that just says it's as if the bumps weren't there. It just went as fast as it would have gone if it had gone in a straight line. But on the other hand, microscopically, it's randomly moving around, so it's only going the square root as far as it should be going.
Right. So the actual velocity can be fast, right? Okay, when you bounce around, it can be fast.
If
sigma dot can be bigger than sigma dot bar, right? So bounce around. That means that the 5R can be quite a bit bigger than average, guided by this equation. Okay, it can be 1 sigma away, 2 sigma away. That means.
But D is small, so it's not.
So you can be square root of D. So you can be square. Typical will be square root D of this away from that. So depends how big D is.
You see the puzzle. The puzzle is that if. But if you didn't have any randomness, I would have said, well, how far did I go? I'd divide by the time it took to get there. That would have been B over 3H. On the other hand, I could say, well, now I do the randomness, and I'm actually going much farther, you know, microscopically, right. But I'm on average going kind of the square root as far. But the time taken was the same. So if I just divided.
Average, yes. Asymptotically. Okay, so if you look at small t, okay, so here I take the large t and limit, okay? But if you look at small t, the formula is very different. That means that t is downstairs. So initially it can be very different, okay? But it quickly, because of the e to the minus 6HT, so one default essentially approaches the drift velocity and then bounces around, but that speed is essentially dictated by the coarse grain. So you may be thinking about usually the, for example, oh, like Sarah said, that it goes like 2dt, okay? That is for small t. That means initial small t. But here I'm looking, we're interested beyond one default, so we're looking at large t. So this is the asymptotic large T expansion, the small t formula is totally different. So usually when you talk diffusion, you're thinking about small t behavior.
I'm just thinking of the way, you know, in your first slide, it was so convincing that you might help yourself with the slow roll problem, because it seemed like you're going to go less distance in the same
way. Right, right, right. Yeah, the first slide convinced me that maybe we don't need to fine tune it. Yeah.
So what happened?
That's not it. What happened? Yeah, well, no. But we're disappointed.
I think this equation is exactly answer your question. Pi naught is greater than the average by that amount, and the claim is just that that amount doesn't. Because
it dies off fast.
It's not a big amount.
Yeah, for example, okay. So for small t, the one cancels this goes like t. So this is essentially very small. So initially zero, you start very small, okay? Or you can start from 5 dot to be go the other direction. Okay, so actually, you know, instead of moving up, let it go. So you can really, yeah. So small t, you can see I can get it a lot, okay? But
microscopically, I never actually know what the B isn't telling me the local force that it feels.
Right.
And so I didn't really know what the speed was to start off with. So it's
right. Yeah. So usually you look at a small time, you say, wow, I can gain a lot. Okay. I should point out a little bit, there's a little subtlety here. I don't know how much time I have. The subtlety is that here. I have to include 5 dot dot. Okay. If you ignore 5 dot dot, then you do slow roll already. But because the fluctuation, you know, may not allow me to drop 5 dot dot, which we can see later, following from the Langevin equation, you don't get the Fokker Planck, okay? You get something different from Fokker Planck, and which is a function really called Planck-Kramer solution, which is a function of position 5 dot, and t. Okay, so you get probability distribution both on the position, that's the speed, the velocity and time. Okay, you get this. And then the equation is much more complicated. However, if you integrate over x, then you get a Fokker Planck equation for probability distribution for $5 t, and that's how the solution comes about. On the other hand, if you integrate out v of 5 dot, you get a non-trivial equation. So things are quite subtle, and except in the slow roll case. Okay. So now, let me consider the following case. Since entropic, we have the fluctuation now. So I'm looking at a fluctuation. I can look at fluctuation adiabatic and fluctuation in entropic both. But entropic, remember, involves the potential and the property and the randomness at the, all the e-fold down to n inflation, because remember, it's the curvature perturbation is an integral of that, because zeta dot is not zero. It's the mode is not frozen outside horizon. So this is actually depends a lot of property, which is detail, which I'm just not going to prioritize it. So let me first assume that this is negligible, okay? Then B, that means it's small, the fluctuation in entropic small, or you can think about the entropic mode itself is small, okay, which it's up to you. So then the D, drift velocity can be written as in terms of 5 dot squared G. G is what our theta over the D, essentially, and the delta NE, okay, which delta NE is how frequent. So delta NE is the number of e-fold evolution between scatterings, okay, and G measures the strength of each scattering, typically. Okay, so this is the relation between diffusion constant and the fluctuation or the scattering, what it is. And then now we can relate D to epsilon, slow roll parameter, and the perturbation. Delta is the typical square root of power spectrum index, which is delta rho over rho, essentially. So we can relate to the data now to see what D should be. And Delta is the fluctuation, okay, of the power spectrum magnitude. So you can find that now how frequent you scatter. And the frequency of scattering roughly goes like this. G must be, if there's no scattering single field, then G would be zero. And G is between zero and one, okay, typically. And delta essentially is the how much fluctuation of power spectrum is, okay? And WMAP gives you roughly 10%. So you find that delta L, one e-fold is roughly at 300-400 units of L. So in terms of moments, delta L goes 50 over G. So essentially means that the features are rather separated. So typical features that one feature every 100 units of L, okay? So they are not that random. So it's like you get bump and then you slow roll, bump, you know? So that's roughly their property. That's right. So that now you have to study feature by feature.
But your delta function correlation, I mean, if you go to Nash,
So in that limit, then, you know, our diffusion is still good if you look at the few thousand L, okay? But if you look at the more fine-grained L, you have to really study feature by feature, okay? On the other hand, if the entropy is great, of course, then since we don't know the property of this, then the feature can be much closer, okay? So essentially, we don't know how close the feature can be, okay? It can be very close if the entropy is big. Entropy essentially measures is how much the entropy mode is. Essentially means how much deviation fluctuation away from the tangential path. So this is very sensible. So the features can be very close if the entropy mode is important. Okay, the fluctuation entropy mode is important, which is depends on a lot of details which we don't know.
So I don't understand what mechanism connects the spacing of these pumps and their magnitude.
Yeah, so that I already discussed. Okay. So this is from a gross analysis. And then when you see the feature very far apart, now we have to look at a feature by feature. So, right. Okay, so that's what we're going to do. Okay? So let's do modeling of the scatterings. So this is typical perturbation fluctuation in momentum phase. And this is the well-known equation. And Z is given by this. And we go to conformal time. This is all very standard. And then Z prime over Z can be analyzed like this. And now what I'm going to do is the difference is that I'm going to add a delta function onto it. And I'm going to add a whole set of delta functions. Okay, so at different time, conformal time, I add a delta plus or delta, delta which is some plus value or negative value. So I will hit bounds. Okay, so this is this particular approach is done by Starobinsky. He did one, but turned out generalizing to many is not that difficult. So we essentially did. So you can do multiple scattering, and then you can evolve the density perturbation, and then hitting this delta function bumps. Okay, it's very straightforward. And you can get the result given by this. Okay, the result. So the result is given by this two leading order delta. The other next leading order is easy to calculate. Okay, so there's a delta square term, easy to calculate. But I don't display here. So this is a normal result, and this is due to the delta i's. Okay. So if you sum the delta i's, typically you can sum this to be zero if you want. Delta i sum to zero because the fluctuation add up to zero. And you can have this behavior given by this formula. Okay, so it doesn't tell you much. But so sum of delta I can be zero, but the delta I squared not zero, and then average of this times this give you diffusion related. That's how we relate diffusion. Okay. Okay, so this is what it is. So I have a potential which is relatively flat, relatively smooth, and then hit a bump. Okay. And then you can hit another bump, you can hit multiple bumps. Okay? And then a typical bump will give you a curve like this. So hit a bump, will go like this. And then remember, this part, the dashed line is the background you can think about. We take the index to be 0.95, so it's sort of sloped down a little bit. You have a slope and a sharper slope, you hit a bump. So not surprising that the power spectrum is slower because my bump is bigger here. Because they're steeper. And so this is typically what a bump will do. Right?
But your spectrum is still.
This is only one bump at a particular time with particular magnitude.
But I'm saying in between.
This is power spectrum, yes.
Your spectrum images don't need to be the same between the bumps either.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, one bump. Okay. Yeah. Now you can add a whole bunch to it.
Yeah, but saying even one bump before and after, you could have different. I mean, because these are different parts of the potential, right?
Yes.
So you could have different. You have the same spectral index.
No. Typically, here the bump essentially is like a kick on the smooth potential, right? So the slope on the two sides are different. No, further out, of course, you can have potential like this and all like this. But when you're close to the bump, you know, it's like a kick. Okay, that's.
Yeah, but I think even far from
the. Far from that, you can change the potential to get whatever you want. But the key is to illustrate the feature of the bump and not so much. You can change the potential here, obviously. Okay. Yeah. So that's the problem. And then the two bumps, you can have two bumps, and two bumps is one down, one this, and that behaves like a stack. Okay. So that you can have two bumps. So you can have two bumps, for example, like this. Okay. For example, two bumps with the same. Okay, they're like 0.1, minus 0.1, and then that behaves essentially like a step, and this is like the width of step, and this is the height of step. So two bump two bumps can behave like a step. Okay.
Sorry. In which sense does this still multi-field then?
This multi-field is that the bumps come randomly with random magnitude.
But why?
That's the feature already.
But in the equation, in the Wolf-Rosen-Lang equation, you have just one field. You don't have to like excite perpendicular.
So this is encapsulated in these features. Okay. So I did a scatter. Okay. So typically scatter, you scatter. So that the sigma field is this part. Okay. Sigma is not one field. The sigma part can go like this, right? So because it goes like this, the turns is encapsulated in the deltas.
But you can excite also the perpendicular direction.
In fact, that's what's happening. But what's perpendicular? So suppose my path is like this. What's perpendicular becomes tangential. And I'm taking this path.
No, I mean locally perpendicular.
Locally. So locally now is featured by these bumps. Okay. So some way to capture it. Okay. So the key is that you treat it as entropic, that you see that the effect rises. And that's, now we can treat it this way. Okay. So we justify this approximation. Okay, so here's seven scatterings, okay? Of course, we exaggerate it. We choose the big, So essentially very fluctuating. And these are big, okay? So some of them are quite big, So this is sort of an exaggerated picture of what kind of power spectrum you expect. Instead of smooth spectrum, you expect this fluctuation. Okay? So then the question is, and this fluctuation we cannot predict, but we can calculate its properties. Okay.
Why doesn't it mimic something like running spectrum? I mean, you have a dotted line there, which it seems.
Yeah, dotted line essentially is a smooth. It can be a potential smooth. Right. I will get that aspect. Right. And then you say, it's not smooth, you're keeping bumps. Okay.
Right, but why can't
randomly, with random magnitude at random places.
But why can't it have some curvature?
You can get that curvature, sure. You can add some more curvature if you want, yeah. So you can put dnd log k with some running, which actually this border had some running. So dnd log k, I skip it, but that's a VR VRK some running also, so you can put it in. Those are second order effects, okay. This fluctuation is leading order effect.
So you have no entropy perturbation.
Entropic, yeah. In a sense that this fluctuation is due to the entropic. So, but the calculation is a little bit difficult. So what we do is we show the entropic because the randomness factorizes into adiabatic entropic, and then we treat the entropic as if the fluctuation in the single field. Okay.
So
this is an approximation we're making.
But in some sense, it's like a single field. Because
it's what?
In some sense, it's like a single field, but the effect of those.
Yes. In a sense, it's just like single field.
Random source you added through your trajectory, but still you're dealing with effectively one single field.
Because the trajectory, classical trajectory, is still, you can think about like a single field.
But if your trajectory is like curved, then I expect you have like entropy perturbation. But
entropy, yeah. But you can think about this bump effect as resulting from entropy. So the argument I gave earlier, sort of justified this approximation. So you can think about this approximation, and since the potential of random fluctuation is random, and I don't know the magnitude of randomness, and I don't know how often. So if you do a more exact calculation, more precisely, that probably gets same random curve.
So
all I can do is to do the magnitude passing the diffusion constant and the frequency of scattering the string.
Suppose I have some random sources, then what do you distinguish with these?
You will see a curve like this, I claim.
But I won't say that it's still in the single field.
Huh?
Use the fact that it's a multiple field. I mean, otherwise you will have entropy perturbation.
Yeah, so let me put it the following way. If you do slow roll, and if you do a random field, then a random potential, for example, then you can easily get trapped somewhere. Okay? And here, I always consider never get trapped. And that must come from a multidimensional background. Single field, if you slow roll, single field, okay? let me say, you do slow roll, single field, and you can't hit a bump, okay? You're pretty much not going to overcome that. Okay. You get trapped. So this way, it allows you to justify why you don't get trapped. But, and roughly what the power spectrum looks like. And mimicking, it's a single field with random scattering, mimicking multi-field with the non-trivial potential.
But the effect that you're recovering is basically you're following the classical trajectory, along the trajectory, and you see, give an argument why each step should be downward.
No. The downward is due to the background coarse grain potential.
The steps.
Yeah, steps no, can be up, down. Can be up. No, can be up. Up, down, either way is fine. In fact, you can go. So the up will just be, you can go up. Remember, I keep the 5 dot up, okay? So if we go up, the potential will just reverse this. We go like this, this way. You just reverse it.
Sure, but you're going really one direction. So
Sure.
Cover isothermal equation, what's that?
Well, so here's that we're mimicking the, I don't call isothermal, I call entropic.
Entropic.
Right. I call the entropic effect is mimicked by this behavior. And I sort of justify it in the, you know, it's a series of approximations I'm making, okay, and try to justify it. It's very important because if it, in general, the entropic effect is tells you how the curvature perturbation evolves as a function of time. So there's no factorization, okay? But because this is random, you get a factorization. And once you get a factorization, you can treat it approximately this way. That's the approximation I'm going for. Yes.
So instead, you're using the entropic perturbation to kick around your field around the multi-field.
Yes.
But then we have limits on the entropic perturbation.
Sure.
Does that limit your ability to kick it around?
Yeah. So yeah. Of course, there's limits.
We don't have limits on this entropic perturbation.
Oh, no. This is power spectrum. Limits. I'm coming to that.
Not
the limits. Yes.
5 minutes.
5 minutes. Okay. That's good. I can do it. Okay. So. Okay, there's another effect to mention, which is very important also, is that you can tunnel. So you have a bump here, and if the tunneling is fast, then this effect can be included also. But this would be quantum effect, and this quantum effect, of course, can tunnel somewhere. So it's like tunneling along the signal direction, but actually, you know, you can hit a bump, and then you can tunnel some other direction. And there's a coefficient called gamma, which is the tunneling rate over H4. So this is tunneling rate on the landscape per unit Hubble volume, okay? So gamma is the dimensionless. If gamma is much bigger than one, then that means that tunneling is very efficient and the tunneling will happen fast and everywhere will be tunneled, and this is known as percolation. So you will complete the everywhere, so you won't get stuck with bubbles, okay? So if gamma is small, then you will have a bubble, and you know, bubble will grow, so it would be essentially eternal inflation can take place. So we hear is that the typical lifetime is TF, but in the delta N form result, the curvature perturbation is such delta N, which is essentially this. So typical lifetime essentially is given by H, TF here, TF times H, giving the curvature perturbation. So this actually contributes to the curvature perturbation as well. And then in order to satisfy the delta N, delta rho over rho 10 to the minus 5, you find TF is typically very small, very fast also. Okay, that's what it means. And we can include these sources as well. Okay. So now let's look at our data. I mean, everybody has seen the data. And the question is there any feature? Okay, because it's very, very smooth curve. And you look at data point, there's one data point here, well, there, let me forget about that, but and maybe a data point here. So there are three data points which people say, it varies from what we know. And then if you treat these two data points as one, then this can be explained by step, coolly. And many people have done that, so that's a huge literature on explaining this if it's real. Okay. So the question is, are these features real? Well, so you look at the data, which important point is that this data is that they didn't plot a data point for each L. Okay. Rather, they bin, typically for WMAP, they bin 20 L. You know, unit 20 out, say L equals 20 to 40, one data point. 40 to 60, another data point. So they bin 20 units of L for each data point. Okay? But suppose you don't. You look at the raw data. Okay, this is raw data they have. Okay? This is again in L, this is the data, and the error bars included. And if you don't have the error bars, this is the curve. Okay. So this is per unit per L, okay? And instead of bidding 20 into one data point. So if you bring 20 into one data point, you get a smooth curve, pretty much smooth curve, okay? So any fluctuation will have been binned away, okay? But if you don't bid it, this will be the curve we have. So question is, you want to look at this curve more carefully, and people have done that, actually, last few months. Nagata and Yokoyama did this, and then they came, well, this is probably, this is the sort of feature about quantity. And then they say there's a feature at 110, which is sort of the third arrow I have, okay, which they claim. And they claim this is the 3.3 sigmoid deviation. Okay, so what it means is that with future data, we can see that this becomes 4 or 5 sigma, or this will disappear. That's the bottom line. And Nicholson and Contoldi also did that, but they put in all data, not just WMAP, they put also as much TE as possible into it. And then they say that this is the background, okay? And this is the one sigma, the dark blue, and the light one is the two sigma effect. So at the feature, which is L equal 20 around, you see this, and then this is really like a four sigma here, okay? Based on that. And this is less than two sigma. So if you come back, and then there's a feature here, you can look at other features. But those are more or less like a two sigma effect. Okay, so a lot of one, two sigma effect. So typically we can say that we know that if you have 100 bins, you're bound to have one bin with three sigma effect. Okay, so if you have one three sigma effect out of 100 bins, that's a statistic. But suppose you have 10 three sigma effect out of 100 bins, that will be a signal, okay? That will tell you there's real fluctuation. So the question is, we have to wait for Planck. Here's the WMAP data a little bit more flow up, which is helpful. You can see the fluctuations, okay? But you can also see the error bars. And without detail, you can see the size of error bars and the size of fluctuations comparable. So this is actually more or less in one sigma, okay? Most of the time, within one sigma. Or a little bit, sometimes two sigma, sometimes less. So this is completely consistent with no fluctuation, okay? Except the few bumps I mentioned, which various people claim that maybe it's some sigma. Yes?
Sorry, I mean, why can't you just bin it by staggering, right? So instead of binning 20, 20, 20, you stagger the bins. So you
can do whatever bin you want, but once you bin 20, suppose my features have delta L is 2, okay? So that means that for 20 units of L, I should have 10 features. And if you average it, it's gone, right? So that means that you have to look at the fine-grained data, okay? But the fine-grained data, you are limited by the uncertainty. So this is typical uncertainty. In terms of CL, this is the typical uncertainty. And I will be for 2 minutes, okay? So this is the detector uncertainty, more or less. Delta T is the pixel fluctuation temperature, and delta theta is sort of the full width half minimum of the beam size. And sigma B is given by this. So you can see, but small L smaller than sigma B, this is less than one, and this is not big. But for very small L, this exponential to 1, this becomes negligible, and then you dominate by this. And this is cosmic variance. Okay? So if the detector is perfect or very, very good, then it's dominated by cosmic variance. But as you go to a large L, the error grows exponentially like an E over L squared. So if you go to a large L, you lose sensitivity. Okay? This is roughly the pickup from WMAP. So this is experimental specification for WMAP class, but I will focus on the second one, okay? So second one, this is L, roughly 20, 200, 500, L. And the cosmic variance essentially means the uncertainty due to the first curve is roughly given by this, okay? The percentage of the power spectrum. Okay? WMAP, you can see that WMAP is essentially hitting the cosmic variance up to like 400. And then it gets bad, okay? And it gets bad pretty fast, okay? And Planck hit the cosmic variance almost all the way to 1500. So that means that the Planck can do a lot, can narrow down the error bars. We can't do better than cosmic variance, but we can essentially reach cosmic variance up to like 1500.
So that offer a great help. And furthermore, so the feature that we talk about, three features, possible features, is below 500. It's below 200. So WMAP cannot improve on it. That means the more statistics doesn't have. Planck cannot improve on that, except that if it's primordial and not statistical fluctuation, that maybe TT, TE, and EE are correlated. So if you say it's exactly the same fluctuation in EE and TE, then that's sort of will enhance the signal, if it's a real signal. Okay. So this is another way to show the sensitivity to the fluctuations. So that means that if those are features, not only that Planck can improve on it, the sensitivity, and to see that by measuring EE and TE, and also TT to make sure that the different satellites will have different kind of fluctuations, statistical fluctuations. But if furthermore, if those features are true, then we expect more features, okay, all the way up to even maybe 3,000 if you have local telescope or ground-based observers. But Planck will certainly go to 1,500, and then you expect maybe at least a dozen more features, maybe. Okay? So, and then together, one can see, and the features are different. They don't have periodicity to it, they don't have regularity to it, they're different features at different random places, but would be somewhere in space. So this is the essential prediction. Now, internal inflation, I just make a comment here. Internal inflation people will have, the internal inflation potential will be sitting here, and at a certain point will tunnel down, and then you have a smooth potential to go over. And inflation here cannot explain the CMP, obviously, which I said earlier, because power spectrum index would be 31. But once you tunnel, you need a smooth potential to explain this. So, but it needs something such that you can have many people there, which is where internal inflation comes from. So the picture, I would say that, well, if you have a bump, why not bumps over here? Okay. Why this bump has a break and no bumps there? I mean, maybe this bump is small and then there's many bumps over there. And that's essentially the picture. So the P now is that if mobility in the landscape is present, then I expect to see some features, random features in the power spectrum. So that's the conclusion. And of course, I don't know the randomness by almost by definition, but if you see the randomness, you can measure that, and then that can tell you a lot about the landscape. So that's essentially the point. So that's another way maybe we can test the landscape of the string theory. So, okay, thanks.
Discussion to copy, because we have a meet back here in 15 minutes at half past.